Paper 15, section 12, which is old single column, page 180. All right, so let me wrapping up this paper tonight and this block on cosmology. So just, you know, one little point to remind yourself where we are. They're talking about super universe headquarters and how you have basically the three branches of government that we're familiar with there, in a much more purified form because of the perfect beings involved and whatnot. But we went through the executive branch and the legislative branch. Now we have the judicial. And remind yourself of a, when you're talking about the judicial branch, you're touching on one of those very root foundational facts of the Paradise Trinity. And we're talking about a government run by beings who, by and large, are either Trinity origin beings or trinitized beings. So that, of those four foundational functioning aspects of the Paradise Trinity, that first one in that list is justice administration. And the stationary sons of the Trinity, if you remember back, you know, at the end of the Paradise Trinity paper when we talked about that, here we are seeing some of that in action. Those stationary sons of the Trinity in that justice administration role. And the reason I want you to remind yourself of that is when you're thinking about these beings in that role, they are functioning very much from the nature of their self, which is directly tied to that non-personal fact that is the Paradise Trinity, you know, rather than as persons. And that's the key. That the same reason that we recognized centuries ago that Lady Justice should have a blindfold on, and we needed to make our best effort to take any sort of a personal, you know, vendetta, revenge, that sort of stuff, out of justice, make it as non-personal and as group a phenomenon as possible. You have the ultimate foundation of groupness, the totality attitude of the Paradise Trinity and its non-personalizable deity. So these beings are expressing that fact that it's nothing personal fact of the administration of law, justice, the exercise of law. All right. So.
12, the Supreme Tribunals. When we speak of executive and deliberative branches of the universal government, you may, from the analogy of certain forms of Urantian civil government, reason that we must have a third or judicial branch, and we do. But it does not have a separate personnel. Our courts are constituted as follows. There presides, in accordance with the nature and gravity of the case, an Ancient of Days, a perfecter of wisdom, or a divine counselor. The evidence for or against an individual, a planet, system, constellation, or universe is presented and interpreted by the censors. The defense of the children of time and the evolutionary planets is offered by the mighty messengers, the official observers of the super universe government to the local universes and systems. The attitude of the higher government is portrayed by those high in authority, and ordinarily the verdict is formulated by a varying sized commission consisting equally of those without name and number and a group of understanding personalities chosen from the deliberative assembly.
Okay, so you can see they have a whole spectrum these Trinity origin or Trinitized beings involved here. And just a quick little thumbnail reminder, when they bring in those Trinitized Sons of Attainment, the mighty messengers, those high in authority and those without name and number, it makes basic sense that they take on those three different roles. Remember, all three of them are mortals who've fused with their adjuster and made it all the way to paradise, were inducted into the core of the finality, but were then snatched out by the Paradise Trinity for this special role. And the difference between the three, the reason they get split up into these three groups, the mighty messengers are those ascenders that had some very direct involvement in a rebellion in which they stood firm. So they have not an indirect, but a very direct resistance to in the face of rebellion, to the sophistries. So they're not only ascenders, started as mortals and have that whole basic relationship to the mortal experience and the ascension experience, but as broad an experience too, that they had to, they demonstrated great breadth of integrity because they dealt with very difficult situations. So it wasn't just sort of this, sneaking through the easiest cracks of the ascension screen, scheme. So that's why they're, representing the, the creatures involved. Yeah.
The mighty messengers. These are individuals who have been tested through rebellion. Now, would that include us, or are we post-rebellion?
Again, that's what I was saying. I mean, they don't give you anything precise. But it is obvious that they're talking about very direct, okay? Because they don't say, you being from Urantia will be a mighty ascender, or a mighty messenger, a mighty messenger, as an ascender, okay? No, that's a solitary messenger. But it's certainly a possibility, for someone like us that we, because they're just ascended mortals. Now, those high in authority are the subset that demonstrate, basically executive genius, very, very keen sense of administrative and executive nature. Okay. And so when I say that, you might think, is there actually this pattern again? Yeah, there is kind of, a legislative, executive, and then those without name and number, more directly judicial. They're kind of splitting into that, those three camps again, not simplistically, but it has kind of that flavor again. Okay, and see, those without name and number are really, involved directly in the verdict. And the interesting thing about them being involved is their distinction is that they are the greatest examples of unity consciousness. They stand, head and shoulders above others in that clear recognition of the unity aspect of reality. So that when they serve in this capacity, they very definitively take the big picture into account, in passing judgment. Okay, so like I mentioned last time, if you want to jump ahead, you can read the three sections up in the Trinitized Sons of God paper about the mighty messengers, those high in authority and those without name and number, and get a little bit more. But that's the basic reason why they're involved. You know, they don't want someone with a really circumscribed picture citing, well, in light of the whole, this is the judgment. They want someone who really has the big picture in mind. And, you know, and the mighty messengers are there to provide all of the defense, you know, for, you know, to really present the case. Well, you got to understand what it's like down in the trenches. It gets pretty ugly, you know, they can really present that case. Okay. So, and remember, a universal censor is writing this paper, and he's talking about presented and interpreted by the censors. And again, the universal sense, we've talked about them. They're the sort of all-seeing microscopes of the gods. You know, when they say presented and interpreted, they have the definitive insight to tell you exactly what this that they're presenting means. And then it's the perfecters of wisdom or the divine counselors, they're sort of cohorts that are joining up with the ancients of days to be sort of the judge, actual judge, primary judge. All right. Nope, you got it.
In this list of for and against, you've got individuals, planets, systems, constellations, but universe?
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I mean, if nothing else, you already know that a local universe has to go through an assessment about whether or not they are worthy to be admitted into the super universe officially. Okay, they're going to get judged in that way. I mean, we know at least that much. You know, there's not a lot of details that you can talk about. They're pretty vague on specifics about all this sort of stuff, kind of judgments and stuff. But I mean, certainly there's that that assessment of where the local universe stands in terms of its ascent.
Kind of tribunal that looks at that.
I mean, you know, this is the spirit level. I mean, if you think about the local universe, it has three levels too, remember? And so when you're judging it at the local universe headquarters level, you're judging the unity aspect of the local universe, and that would definitely be judged by the unity level of the super universe. Okay. So, and you reminded me, I just wanted to point out, let's see, where in the heck was that again? Oh, yeah. When they say about the mighty messengers, the official observers of the super universe government to the local universes and the systems, did you notice they skipped the constellations? Someone have an immediate recognition of why? Right, because the Most Highs are very directly connected to the Ancients of Days. Okay, so it's just, the mighty messengers serve at all levels in all sorts of different ways, but them saying it that way is just a little subtle reminder that there's a really solid linkage between the Ancients of Days and the constellation level already because of the Most Highs. Okay.
The courts of the Ancients of Days are the high review tribunals for the spiritual adjudication of all component universes. The sovereign sons of the local universes are supreme in their own domains. They are subject to the supergovernment only insofar as they voluntarily submit matters for counsel or adjudication by the Ancients of Days, except in matters involving the extinction of will creatures. Mandates of judgment originate in the local universes, but sentences involving the extinction of will creatures are always formulated on and executed from the headquarters of the super universe. The sons of the local universe can decree the survival of mortal man, but only the Ancients of Days may sit in executive judgment on the issues of eternal life and death.
And when they say executed from, they mean executed from. as in the executioners of the Ancients of Days. So the full spectrum of executing those orders. But just a couple things to stress in there. So, you know, don't get confused. You know, they're very careful. The sovereign sons of the local universes. You know, so only when it's a master son, you know, is it in, you know, when they're not a master son, yeah, when they're just a creator son still, The super universe is very much in charge of, you know, the bottom line of things. But even when they're a master son, you know, the actual extinction of a will creature is only solely in the hands of the Ancients of Days.
Michael couldn't come into your, you know.
Let me just notice what they say about that. You know, and this applies to us very recently, 2,000 years ago. The sons of the local universes can decree the survival of mortal man. Mortal man. Okay, so a master son can do what our master son did and basically, you know, make it so that unless you really, really work at it hard and manage to achieve iniquity in this short little mortal life, okay, you're going to survive to the next life. You may not survive eternally, but you're going to at least, you know, survive the mortal life, okay? Pretty likely. You know, and so the sons of the local universes can you know, do that like ours did, and just pour out the Spirit of Truth on all flesh and basically gives everyone a pass you know, to the full mansion world extension of the mortal life for them to really come to that definitive binary decision point about oblivion or eternity. But still, you know, if an individual chooses oblivion, that's in the final hands of the Ancient of Days. Yeah.
Yep. You know, I'm getting more and more a feeling that the mansion worlds really are a direct extension of our experience here.
Right.
It's not, it's just an extension.
Right. It's just an extension. It's extension school, very much. I mean, as soon as you can have a full life on a mortal world, you know, the things are advanced enough and you're living long enough, you don't need the mansion worlds anymore. They're only there because of all the vicissitudes of this initial mortal life. The only reason they're there. Yeah.
Pre-lightened life spheres.
Yeah, I mean, just, yeah. As soon, you know, and remember how there's a whole gradual movement away from using the mansion worlds. I mean, even now you can quickly skip through some of them, but, you know, you can skip right over them. You know, they're still functioning because there's a lot of people who still need them, but you skipped over them. But eventually, everyone is skipping over them, and they shut them down. Yeah. Let's see. There's something else in there. I guess that was it. I think I touched on everything there. But you know, you can see right at the very beginning, high review tribunals for the spiritual adjudication. You know, don't think fuzzily about that adjective. That's very, you know, that's the, you know, it's just the spiritual. You'll see when we get to the next section. The other stuff is dealt with before it gets up to this level. Yep.
You asked, okay, so the Ancients of Days are here, right above the Master Creator Sons on this level.
Right.
So can we discuss a little bit about what exactly, I mean, I can't really formulate in my mind who they are. What they look like, or
well, no one's going to formulate what they look like. But just, you know, so it's just a matter of you got the local universe and the super universe, so they're the next notch up.
Yeah.
Okay, both are God, Creator Sons, Creator Mother Spirits are God, Ancients of Days are God. It's just the next notch up. For instance, a simple way to think about a contrast, the Ancients of Days are very definitively supreme personalities. Period. Okay. A Creator Son, especially when it's just starting a Creator Son, they don't directly possess a supreme nature. That's the whole point of the seven bestowals, is building up a little measure of supreme type deity to be within them. Okay, so as a master son and one of the Ancients of Days, you know, have a much more direct similarity now because of that literal supremacy nature. But still, the Master Sun is a smaller measure than an Ancient of Days. And you can just see that directly in how they manifest. Even as a Master Sun doesn't suddenly, well, I'm going to take over the whole super universe now. No, I mean, they're still just, it's just their local universe, this tiny little part of a super universe. Okay, they only have a tiny little measure of supremacy, a tiny measure of whole-likeness. Okay, and in Ancient of Days, especially three of them together as one, you know, they have a footprint the size of a super universe. Okay, so they have much greater extent, but the Master Sun has kind of gotten up to that level, but he still casts a much smaller shadow than an Ancient of Days. Right. Yes, exactly.
Where's the best place to really learn more of the Ancients of Days?
Yeah, that's so.
Yeah,
so we're gonna we're about ready to start moving into those papers. It's three papers ahead, if I remember right, that we get into the Of Days, and I mean, there's a lot of stuff scattered around. Of course, I mean, if you want to really do an extensive study, besides reading that section on the Ancients of Days in that paper, the Supreme Trinity Personalities paper. You know, you can just do a search on Ancients of Days, and because there's stuff scattered around a lot. I mean, especially there's a lot of stuff scattered around because of what we just read. You know, this fact that they're the ones that are supremely responsible for issues of eternal survival. So, you know, there's lots of spots in the book that issue comes up, and so the Ancients of the Days come up. But certainly one of the big things is to recognize right off the bat when you're trying to really get your mind wrapped around them, is that they're God. Okay, you know, that you can get lost in perfections of days and eternals of days and reasons of days and this, that, that. You know. Okay, those are just a bunch of really high creatures. The Ancients of Days are God. Okay. So they're personalized deity. They are in the hierarchy of fathers. They're the super fathers. One notch below the Havona Father, the Universal Father. Okay. You know, very definitive fact in the universe, and another big important part that you want to recognize about them is that those 21 Ancients of Days, you know, there's just 21 of them, three in each of the seven super universes. Those 21 Ancients of Days all have the exact same self, flavor of self that's personalized. Their 21 personalities are absolutely unique, but what that personality is identifying with is identical amongst the 21. So the nature of their self provides a common footprint all the way around the super universe level. Unlike the master spirits that are, you know, limited to just one, the Ancients of Days, together, the 21 of them, establish a collective super universe level that's actually above the single super universe footprint of a master spirit. Okay. Now, there's a whole bunch of things about the master spirits that are higher than the Ancients of Days and stuff. But in this part of the picture, and let's just, you know, this chart that Pam was bringing up there about the psychic circles and the sevenfold, you know, reminds you of that little reciprocal relationship between the Ancients of Days and the master spirits, and that, you know, their direct footprint, you know, the womb, you know, the mothers that they're associated, the mothers that are directly associated with the master spirits, the reflective mother spirits, see, are below the mothers that are associated with the Ancients of Days, the creative mother agencies, because that womb is an individual super universe size. Above it is a womb of the whole seven. You know, it's in that mindal womb that you're functioning as a finaliter when you're going out. You have to be plugged into something that isn't limited to a super universe, because you're going to go to all seven. You've got to be plugged into a higher mindal womb. It's something that's common all the way around, still below the universal mother, you know, below, you know, God the Supreme, but all the way around. Okay, see, and that's the reason that those mother beings associated with the Ancients of Days can establish a womb that's all the way around, is because that's the nature of the Ancients of Days. There is no differential in their nature. Well, that's common all the way around. Okay. All right, let's see. So where were we? I guess we were ready for the in all matters, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
In all matters not requiring trial, the submission of evidence, the Ancients of Days or their associates render decisions, and these rulings are always unanimous. We are here dealing with the Councils of Perfection. There are no disagreements nor minority opinions in the decrees of these supreme and superlative tribunals. With certain few exceptions, the supergovernments exercise jurisdiction over all things and all beings in their respective domains. There is no appeal from the rulings and decisions of the super universe authorities, since they represent the concurred opinions of the Ancients of Days and that Master Spirit who, from Paradise, presides over the destiny of the super universe concerned.
Okay, that one little line in there, of course, was what's stuck in Lucifer's craw. There is no appeal from the rulings and decisions of the super universe authorities. That's why he called them foreign potentates. Okay? He just could not abide with that notion that they were the boss of him. Okay? You're not the boss of me, you know. Put that childish thought in Lucifer's mouth, because that's where it is. That's the little childish thought that's in Lucifer's head. You're not the boss of me. And that's why he, you know, inaugurated the rebellion. Literally, because of that little childish thought in a being's head who's in charge of a whole local system. Yeah. The extent to which we all suffer on a rebellion sphere, you know, with a measure of just sort of a common understanding amongst ourselves for 200,000 years, we have the final say. No, okay. And we are all under the Ancients of Days too. You have to pass their test. You don't get to survive to eternity just because you want to. Okay? And it's like, well, I don't want to submit to some arbitrary. Well, there's nothing arbitrary. You know, what did they just say in the previous paragraph? Okay, we are here dealing with the Councils of Perfection. Okay? You will be perfectly judged. The only reason that you don't make it to eternity is if you aren't real. Okay? Just be real. You'll be fine. There's nothing to worry about. And you certainly shouldn't struggle with the idea of them having that kind of authority over you. They're God. God has authority over us. We're just creatures. That's just the way it is. We have to come to terms with that at some point. Yep.
Well, what Lucifer and Calogastia truly needed was the Urantia book. I mean, we've got the info. He had to have had access to it. How could he? Never mind. I don't want to get all
twisted that.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, he had access to a lot more information than this.
A lot of people who have the Urantia book, and
it doesn't help.
The problem is not lack of information. The problem is the Father gave each of us absolute free will to circumscribe our insight until it sees nothing but our navel. And that's what happened.
It begins with certain few exceptions.
Right, and...
So now, would those be things that aren't important enough?
You're just left wondering. For instance, the master spirits are God. Yeah, God the Spirit, God the Son, God the Father are God. God the Supreme is God. I mean, you know, there's bound to be some stuff at a higher pay grade. I can't even speculate. I don't know what the few exceptions are. They're just, you know, I'm sure the main reason they throw that in, besides sparking curiosity, is, you know, is just to remind you that we're always functioning in a hierarchy here. You know, it's not like it's just Lucifer that needs to recognize that they have the final say. So do the ancients of days have to recognize that someone above them has, you know, a final say in some things. Just because you're God doesn't mean you aren't subject, that you don't have duties. You know, they still have duties. They have to pass muster. You know, they have the free will that they could do something that would cause them to be extinguished. You know, they're not going to do it because they're perfect, but it's a possibility. They have free will. You know, someone would overrule an Ancient of Days if an Ancient of Days did something wrong. Yeah.
A talk about being real reminds me that I once had a friend who talked about, well, in this situation, we need to act sincere. Wait a minute. You can't act sincere. You either are sincere or you aren't.
Yeah, how about be sincere? Yeah. I mean, Linus is not acting. Linus is sincere.
To think of the Ancients of Days as foreign potentates, because it's really their nature that he was rebelling against, not the person.
Yeah, remember, you know, and that's second principle, the Lucifer Manifesto. That's the anarchy principle, the rejection of the hierarchy. You know, no rule. You know, he's declaring that the universe is a plane, that there's no vertical dimension. You know, that's what an anarchist is, someone who declares that the entire, all of reality exists in a plane. There is no above and below. Okay, that's an anarchist. But the universe is fundamentally hierarchical. And, you know, even like we're saying, there is stuff above the Ancients of Days. You know, it goes all the way from the infinite down to the finite. You know that whole sequence of words that we use to describe that hierarchy. It's a vast hierarchy. And that includes God. God is spread throughout the whole hierarchy. When you start trying to understand the fullness of God the Mother, not just a particular expression of Mother Deity that's personalized, but the fullness of that idea, you know, that very much is you should think of that vertical dimension as being a continuum of Mother Deity. That's the Mother Deity is the continuous substrate that sort of holds the whole hierarchy in place. It doesn't just magically hang there in a hierarchy. It can't collapse because Mother Deity fills the space between all the levels, as it were. Yeah. Mother Deity is very directly a hierarchical expression like that, you know, and not in a discrete way, but in a continuous way. There's no gaps. in that presence of God within. Now, when God the Father pulled himself out, he didn't leave any holes behind. The deity, the personalized deity that's left behind and is within, is ubiquitous. Perfectly ubiquitous, not the tiniest little, you know, crack or hole or divot. Okay.
Yep. All the I Am did when he pulled himself out was purpose that what was left, you know? It stayed ubiquitous. It just purposed it.
Yeah.
Gave it direction.
Right, and still, you know, that, you know, like we were just alluding to, that mother deity stems from the Paradise Trinity, which is not personalizable deity, but there's a little bit more in play than just the Paradise Trinity. What stems from the Paradise Trinity as mother deity is personalizable and is personalized, you know, as God, the mother. Yeah. You know, it's personalizable deity, but it has that foundation of a totality attitude.
Well, if some being isn't personalizable, then how do you understand it?
Well, the key is that the first section of the foreword is deity. The second section is God. The key is to come to terms with one of the most fundamental elements of the fifth epical revelation, that they're revealing a stuff that exists in the universe called deity, which is the fanciest stuff that you could ever imagine. It's a stuff that is that has all of the things that we could really imagine a being right now. Like we've talked about many times, most of the time when we try to understand what we are as a person, we're actually just thinking about the character of ourself. We're not really capable yet of distinguishing the self from the personality very well yet. It's a little more theoretical. The revelation is giving us a very definitive anchor point in that regard, saying there is this thing that is distinct from yourself. Trust me on that. Keep striving for it. Never be satisfied with yourself, no matter how fancy you think it is. Always be striving for for something that goes beyond, something that the personality literally can take a hold of. So if you sort of think about that highest nature of yourself that this personality stuff could potentially take a hold of and make a personalized self out of, this really cosmic self that you could take delight in cultivating, having a personalizable self. Your animal origin self, just in and of itself, is not personalizable. It's a lot more like the Trinity stuff, okay? But that more cosmic, you know, personalizable self, sort of take that, extrapolate that to the extreme. Not personalized, but it's just its nature. And they're saying there is such an infinite, even, you know, goes all the way through the absolute and beyond, extrapolation of that stuff, that personalizable self sort of stuff. It's called deity. It's so transcendent that if you personalize it, you have God. If you personalize the downstepped expression of that deity, you have a self, a personalized self, you have a creature, you don't have God. But in its pure form, not downstepped, when you personalize it, you get God. There's this stuff called deity. They're trying to reveal this. And it's a very literal stuff. It's really kind of the body of God is deity. And personality identifies with that stuff. And it's so literally a substance-like fact that they talk about circuits flowing through this kind of stuff. Like an electrical circuit through a copper wire to think of that deity stuff that literally, that the personality circuit flows through that kind of stuff, that very, very high stuff. Okay. That's basically the long answer to a short question. But that, to really, you know, challenge yourself to think about deity and how that's the very first thing that they introduce, and that is that's the beginning of having a completely different picture of God and reality. That the first section is deity, not God. It's just never been conceived of before by man. Deity's always just been a synonym for God. Yeah. Especially if you capitalize the word deity, okay? And you're really thinking of it as a synonym for God. Not in the Urantia book. It's not a synonym for God. The Paradise Trinity is deity, but not God. Okay? And it's like, well, then it's not going to do anything. It doesn't have free will. No, I mean, deity can do everything that you could ever imagine, okay, something doing. It has profound functions. I mean, there's another example of this. Think about your thought adjuster. The thought adjuster is not personalized, not a person. Does it sound like it's maybe a lot cooler self than you are? Probably even cooler than you could imagine yourself ever being right now, even if you imagined yourself fully personalized or something. I mean, you know, you're still having a hard time putting yourself ahead of the adjuster and it's the way it functions, the way it behaves, its character. Okay. But see, that's just, again, a reminder how little we understand exactly what personality is. Personality is something that will put yourself ahead of the adjuster's self. You know, so, I'm probably not doing much of that right now, am I? I'm probably not that personalized yet. I'm probably just a really fancy self right now, by and large. Yeah.
You're a prison for your adjuster.
Yeah. You're a straitjacket for your adjuster, yeah. Okay, so those are the kind of thoughts that they're trying to, you know, just get you to really just change everything, the way you think about all this. Did you have a comment? Okay. Any? All right. Let's see here. All right. So there we are. Now let's go to the major and minor sectors.
13, the sector governments. A major sector comprises about 1/10 of the super universe and consists of 100 minor sectors, 10,000 local universes, about 100 billion inhabitable worlds. These major sectors are administered by 3 perfections of days, Supreme Trinity personalities. The courts of the perfections of days are constituted much as are those of the ancients of days, except that they do not sit in spiritual judgment upon the realms. The work of these major sector governments has chiefly to do with the intellectual status of a far-flung creation. The major sectors detain, adjudicate, dispense, and tabulate for reporting to the courts of the ancients of days all matters of super-universe importance of a routine and administrative nature which are not immediately concerned with the spiritual administration of the realms or with the outworking of the mortal ascension plans of the paradise rulers. The personnel of a major sector government is no different from that of the super-universe.
Okay, so the challenge there is just to sort of let go of any sort of a initially simple distinction you might make between spirit and mind, so the spiritual and the intellectual. Think about it more abstractly. What I've said early on, always what they're describing here is this basic 3-level structure of the super universe. The bottom level, the minor sector level, is the individuality level. The middle, the major sector, is the associativity level, and the top is the unity level. Now, unity down through associativity to individuality, as we're reading in this order. Okay, so when they say to do with intellectual status, you know, don't think about that. You know, think about, generalize that as much as you can. In other words, you know, all the issues that are about the association of unity to individuality, the relationship between the two, are being dealt with here. Anything that's coming up that's just about that association, okay, is detained at that level and dealt with. And how it was dealt with is, you know, recorded and sent up the chain of command. Okay? But those basic associative issues, you know, specifically what I mean by that, I have no idea. Okay, but that's the crux of it. You know, it's something that doesn't deal just with the direct relationship to unity. It's this relationship between unity and individuality that's being handled here. Okay, and that's why there's 10 major sectors in a super universe, so that there's 70 major sectors all the way around. Okay, it's the associative level. You have sevenfold unity and tenfold individuality. How many different relationships are there between seven things and 10 things? 70. There's 70 different ways that the two, that unity can be associated to individuality. And that's why there's 70 major sectors all the way around. So 10 of those 70 go on in this super universe. Okay? And when you're ascending, you get up to the headquarters of our major sector, but then you go to the other 9 before you go to Uversa. Because you need to spread your experience through all 10 facets of associativity to this particular facet of unity. You know, we have one of the 7 facets of unity here. We know nothing of the other 6 facets of unity. Those are the other 6 super universes. But for our particular flavor of unity, there's 10 different ways to connect to the tenfold individuality. So there's 10 major sectors.
Our super universe experience gives us that portion in order to translate to Havona.
That'll get you into Havona, but it won't get you to supremacy. You've got to get the rest of the story. Okay. So obviously think the same thing when we get to the minor sector. You know, that they're going to deal with the things that are just about the individuality. Yep.
100 billion inhabitable worlds sounds like a lot. You know, and here we are in our day and age wondering if there are other planets out there that are inhabited.
Yeah. And of course, that's just in one wedge of the Milky Way.
And they wonder the same about us.
Yeah. You know, and they're always saying about.
Yeah.
It should. We anymore, you know, with the way our budgets and debt and everything, our budgets, quote unquote, and debt, you know, go, we actually throw the word trillion around a lot these days. You know, but do we really comprehend what a trillion inhabitable worlds means? You know, that there's roughly a trillion inhabitable worlds in our Milky Way galaxy. You know, that is just so beyond our immediate experience. You know, how long does it take you to count to a million? Okay. And, you know, you can neglect all of that effort relative to counting to a trillion. Okay.
100 billion inhabitable worlds, and that's just in the major sector.
Right, 1/10. Right.
That.
See, and that gets you the trillion. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Remember, and think about before you. I mean, you know, you basically can't think about the number, so this is not too hard. Before you try to think about the number, but first, just recognize the truth that's in play. There's a trillion inhabitable worlds in just one Milky Way-sized galaxy. Because the only reason a galaxy exists is to be inhabited. Okay? It doesn't exist to just occupy space, you know, and have dust blowing across it in storms or something, you know? Yeah, and the fact that that's all that's going on the planet Mars, you know, is dust storms, see, tells you something, okay? That's not part of eternity, you know? Because you don't have any dust storms on Havona worlds. One day all the dust storm balls will go away, okay? Right? Okay, not to mention the big balls of gas like Jupiter and stuff, you know? And, So, you know, the universe, because the universe exists to be inhabited, uninhabited spheres are the exception, not the rule. The proper way to think about habitation in the Milky Way galaxy is start with the assumption that it's 100% inhabited, and then start to, you know, take away some that are just totally uninhabitable, because that's the only ones that are taken away. If there's no way for a life carrier to dream up any scheme to make that thing inhabitable, that's the only reason why it's not inhabited. If they can dream up a scheme to make it habited, it is. Even that means making non-breathing beings. Okay.
So, in reality, all things are not possible with God. A great many things are that right. People don't give.
Right. No. But not everything is possible. Some of those planets are square circles.
Yeah.
Sure. That's the way it is.
People want to make everything be okay, and there's universe judges. So
there's law. Okay, and the law isn't anything goes. That, you know, if you go up and read the stone next to God the Father, it doesn't say anything goes.
Right.
Okay, the tablet has specific laws on it. Okay, just like that supposed tablet on Mount Sinai. Okay,
he sets the pattern by being self-limiting.
Right, he limited himself. He's subject to his own laws. If he were to not make himself subject to those laws, guess what would happen to you? You would disappear. You know, you would be a capillary tube in his body. You know, he would incorporate everything into him as God the Infinite, and there wouldn't be any of us. He has to limit himself so that there's room for us. You know, and that limitation is literal. You really exist. Therefore, there's some things that God isn't. God doesn't do. If he did everything, there wouldn't be room for you.
So there's our little personality then. There's something special that God has a design for that he doesn't do, but we have the capability of doing.
He's given you a great trust. He's not forcing you to take it, that trust, to eternity.
That's, but if we don't do it,
someone else will, because it needs to be done. Yeah. That purpose is there for a purpose.
Yeah. It doesn't perish.
Right. It must be so purposed. Would you like to be said purposer? If not, then there will be another. But it will. That purpose will manifest. All right. I forgot where we were. Let's see. Is that where we are? Okay, so let's see. It's just the one other little thing in there. Oh, yeah. You got something too? Oh, okay, here. Just notice the ore with the outworking of the mortal ascension plans of the Paradise Rulers. Okay, so notice that... Paradise rulers are God. Okay, are the perfections of days the rulers of a major sector God? No. Okay, see, yeah. So the God things are in the God's hands, the ancients of days. That's you know, the subtext of that. Yeah.
As the magnificent satellites of Uversa are concerned with your final spiritual preparation for Havona, so are the 70 satellites of U Major the Fifth devoted to your super universe intellectual training and development. From all Orvantan, here are gathered together the wise beings who labor untiringly to prepare the mortals of time for their further progress toward the career of eternity. Most of this training of ascending mortals is conducted on the 70 study worlds.
Notice the way they talk there. That's why I said earlier on when they introduced, you know, the major sector headquarters. I mean, it appears from the way that's worded that there aren't sub-satellites. See, it looks like there's just the one string of 70 pearls, you know, 70 satellites around the headquarters world of the major sector. I mean, it looks pretty. I mean, it doesn't come directly out and say there are no sub-satellites, but it certainly sounds like it. You know. Conducted on the 70 study worlds. It's, you know, not 70 plus. So it apparently, and you'll see it the same way at the minor sector, apparently there aren't sub-satellites at the major and minor sectors. There's sub-satellites, you know, on the other four, you know, to super universe headquarters and then the three levels in the local universe. You have satellites and sub-satellites, but apparently here you just have satellites. And of course, you see the 70 again. You know,
these are big spheres.
Yeah, and with the major sector level, not only are they very big spheres, again, remember we go all the way around, so you have 70 times 10. Okay, you do have 700 of them to go all the way around. You got a lot of what do they call them? Worlds devoted to your super universe intellectual training and development. You know, right? Yeah, you've got a lot of said worlds to go to. Big worlds, lots to do, I'm sure. All right, so intellectual, associative. That's the major sector level.
The minor sector governments are presided over by three recents of days. Their administration is concerned mainly with the physical control, unification, stabilization, and routine coordination of the administration of the component local universes. Each minor sector embraces as many as 100 local universes, 10,000 constellations, 1 million systems, or about 1 billion inhabitable worlds.
Couple things in that little paragraph. Notice at the end there, each minor sector embraces as many as. Yeah. Remember that local universes are constantly being constructed and added to a minor sector. You know, so it's at this level that they speak that way about it. You know, the main parts, the universe of local universes, the main parts of these local universes that are being constructed and they're being added to a minor sector until it gets up to 100 of them. You've got that little passing reference to that. And again, when they say concerned mainly with the physical control, etc., again, don't think about when they say physical or material. Challenge yourself to stop thinking so simplistically about that. What that means is they're concerned with getting individuality fully expressed. And that's not just individuality of things, but also individuality of beings. The more you become related to the whole, the more there's this synthesis developing between the things and the beings. Okay? And so the arrangement of things is also about the arrangement of the individuality of beings and vice versa. So, they don't try to hit you with all of that right off, but that's what you can begin to understand. You know, that, for instance, at the top of all this individuality is the Isle of Paradise. It's not just the absolute of matter in the way you would initially interpret that word matter. It's like, in other words, it's the fanciest dirt, you know, the absolute dirt in the universe. Yes, but a lot more than that. It's the absolute of individuality. All individuality is relative to it. A thought adjuster is an individuated fact relative to it. An Ancient of Days is an individual relative to it. You're an individual relative to it. Every automaton is an individuation relative to it. I mean, it's the absolute of individuality. In order for something to be an individuated, it has to be relative to it. Okay. And so at the minor sector level, they're focusing on that perfect manifestation of individuality in all of its expression to set up the cosmic system so that individuality can fully manifest to perfection and completion to get the grand universe settled in light and life. You know, and for, you know, to really just, you know, spend some time reflecting on that, the arrangement of stars has to do with your potential to self-realize. The literal structure of the, you know, material structure of the universe of universes has to be just so in order for you and every other being to get to the grand universe settled in the light and life. We can't do that in just some random assortment of balls of dirt. They have to be just so and just so arranged. Everything has to be adjusted, okay, to make it potentially part of a whole. The master physical controllers are working day and night on this, trying to get the things so that there can be the fullness of beings. Okay? And I just want to really stress that so that you don't just, it's about physical stuff, whatever. You know, it's when you get there, did we read that part yet? No, I guess not yet. I'm jumping ahead. You know, it's very much the beginning of this bigger process of coming into relationship with individuality. Okay, the other thing, though, it's not just the foundation of this higher level of individuality, associativity, unity. It is also the envelope around a collection of 100 local universes. It is also the coordination of the administration of the component local universes. So there's a part that's sort of the beginning of that upward super universe phenomenon. It also is the, you know, what's immediately above and encompassing the unity of local universes that is a particular local universe. Okay, so it has a bidirectional nature very definitively. And like we mentioned, the creator suns will occasionally go up to that collective level, up to the minor sector, and have a group meeting so they can all be on the same page in their local universes. Okay, it's the coordination level. They go up there to get coordinated. You know, and coordinated is a mother word. You know, they go up there to take stock in the whole. Okay, because they can kind of get circumscribed and stuck down in their little part. You know, and they need to step back and retouch with the big picture. Okay, so two things happening there at the minor sector level.
Minor sector headquarters worlds are the grand rendezvous of the master physical controllers. These headquarters worlds are surrounded by the 7 instruction spheres which constitute the entrance schools of the super universe and are the centers of training for physical and administrative knowledge concerning the universe of universes.
Okay, so there it is. That's the sentence I was looking for. See, they constitute the entrance schools. of the super universe. So, like I said, they're definitely that, getting this new higher relationship to individuality established in this bigger context. Every time you take on a relationship to a bigger part of the whole, you have to fully individuate yourself within that bigger whole. The bigger the whole, the universe, the womb that you're going to come into relationship to, the more internal integrity you have to stay individuated and not get pulled into that whole. So you have this new beginning as a first stage spirit, leaving your local universe to take on a new measure of internal integrity, because you're now going to feel a tension of the universal absolute that you never felt before, that you don't want to spread you out like jelly on a, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Okay? You need to stay together. All right? So, a new consecration of individuality. And what does it take to be all that more definitively individuated? More actualization of personality. Bringing you to an even solider focus. Okay? And you have the potential in that personality to be so rock solid integrous that at the ends of eternity, you can feel the full tension of the universal absolute and you won't be pulled apart by it.
You're going to have a paradise substance type of individual.
Right. You have to become a rock like the isle. Absolutely individuated. Okay? But it's a step-by-step process. Every time you go up a notch, you have to, you know, take on a new consecration of individuation. So, again, is individuality important to ascension? Or is it all about just trying to let go of yourself, your individual self, and become part of a unity? No, that's the exact opposite of what you want to do. Okay? You're trying to manifest your personality, which means you become more individuated. If you're spiritual but not religious, if you really say, I'm going to consecrate myself wholeheartedly to not being religious, but just spiritual. Well, that's consecrating yourself to being non-personal, non-individuated. That's to disappear into the ocean. Okay? You need to be religious. It needs to be personal. Spiritual experience. It needs to be a focusing fact. And ever, ever more so as you go up.
It's like having a purpose to not be purposed.
Yeah. You know, you're going to learn how to be, you know, as a first stage spirit, you need to be all the more personal, see, religious, in order to exist in the super universe. You know, more religious, less merely spiritual.
That's a big chip. That's the huge work part of it for the individual.
To try to bring yourself, keep yourself focused together in the midst of being more and more connected to the whole. You know, it takes the full measure of your consecration to the Father to so individuate.
Something in the biblical understanding, I think, of a statement like, giving up yourself.
Right, you want to, you want to die to self in the animal origin, non-consecrated sense. You know, and so much of sort of the immediate way to understand that is what I was alluding to earlier. You need to let go of the parts of yourself that aren't personalizable. Because guess what? That mortal self dies and is not resurrected. So you might as well start that process now, okay? I mean, the extent to which you don't complete it now, God does it by fiat, you know, and he just kills it. Okay, you know, that self... You've died to that self. That self has died. God killed it. Okay? End of story. But you see, that whole process of more and more consecrating your mindal self to the cosmos, making it personalizable. I mean, yeah, you want to consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father, but you want to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. You want yourself to be personalizable, and then that will, that personality that you've consecrated, will personalize it. But it can't personalize that which is not personalizable. And you need to die to the part that's not personalized more. You know, let go of it. Recognize it for the scaffolding it is, and let go of it.
Crudely, could I put that as a difference between the loving self and the selfish self?
Sure, in the sort of the most simplistic binary sort of way. The self, there's the self that has its feet planted on the zeroth level of meaning, that has its feet planted in fear. Okay? And then there's the self that has its feet planted in the cosmos, that's standing on the ubiquitous presence of the Mother. Okay? You want to progressively just let go of the material gravity that's keeping that fear, animal origin, fear-based, fear foundation self, the one that really has the final say in everything. You want the final say to be that personalized self that's in the upper domain of the hourglass, that has its feet planted on the cosmos. The more you choose to have self up there, the more personality gets actualized. The personality can't actualize that self that has its feet planted in fear.
So that way is the mind business, and that way is going to make you personalizable.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to do the Father's part without the way.
Right. The cosmos, that universal harmony, what kind of a harmony is it? It's a tri-unity. Personality can only engage a tri-unity. It can't engage something that's just, merely unity or just associativity or just individuality. You have to bring the three together as one, and that's what personality wraps around. That's what it actualizes in, is that tri-unity. Okay? That's what's up here. That's not what's down here. And just all the things you can think of, like when you talk about faith being the opposite of fear, that's these two directions we're talking about. You want to start with that initial personalized self that's given to you by grace, that has its feet planted in faith, and take delight in cultivating it growing. Okay. Rather than that self that has its feet planted in fear. And if you grow that self that has its feet planted in faith, that faith will grow into trust. And that spiritual faith will become soul trust, literal substance. The extent to which you take delight in cultivating that faith-based individual, that faith-based self, is the extent to which you have something that the adjuster can copy into soul, and you have something that doesn't die. The soul is fundamentally a cosmic weave. It is that. It's the measure of your triunity nature made substance by the adjuster. It's only that wholehearted triunity nature self that survives. And even Jesus couldn't personalize all of his animal origin self. It's not like there was no animal origin self, non-personalizable self to die when he died. No, he died. Okay, there's part of you that's just scaffolding. Okay, and not even the most precocious individual that's ever lived could personalize it, because it's just not personalizable, okay? It's scaffolding. But there's part of you that is personalizable. But it's not personalizable until you've consecrated it to be like the harmony of the cosmos. Okay? All right. So, all right. Let's see here. Where are we? There? Okay.
The administrators of the minor sector governments are under the immediate jurisdiction of the major sector rulers. The Licens of Days receive all reports of observations and coordinate all recommendations which come up to a super universe from the Unions of Days, who are stationed as Trinity observers and advisors on the headquarters spheres of the local universes, and from the Faithfuls of Days, who are similarly attached to the Councils of the Most Highs at the headquarters of the constellations. All such reports are transmitted to the Perfections of Days on the major sectors, subsequently to be passed on to the courts of the Ancients of Days. Thus, the Trinity regime extends from the constellations of the local universes up to the headquarters of the superuniverse. The local system headquarters do not have Trinity representatives.
You know, and that, the fact that you've downstepped so far that that Trinity can't really directly come into engagement with it is, you know, one of the, another ways to recognize that is that you can have a system sovereign rebel. I mean, it's that removed from the totality attitude on high, it's that individuated that it can experience rebellion, and the Trinity regime can't come down and directly engage it.
But it has to do with the tension involved, though. Prior, because Lucifer is a fairly recent phenomenon in the long scheme of things.
Sure.
So there's more unity, likeness, and play than there was earlier on in the development of local universe. Mm-hmm. So there's more, they're more challenged. Someone on a system level is, has greater challenge than the period
sure. before that. Yeah, and so like when they've, you know, the prior two rebellions in Nebadon, you know, thinking in that evolutionary mode you're in there, obviously the bigger they are, the harder they fall. You know, see, so the more that the local universe evolves, the more cataclysmic a rebellion becomes. I mean, you're falling from a higher height. You are disrupting more unity than you could have disrupted, you know, in some prior age. You know, so the Lucifer rebellion was a very cataclysmic disruption of unity.
And now that we have a sovereign, a master son,
right,
there might lend more stability. So there could still be another.
Right. I mean, it's
rebellion, but maybe not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you kind of get the sense that they're thinking that it's probably just not going to happen now that there's a master son. You know, that he will just deal with it. But
especially with all the learning curve that the rebellions that we've had give to it. I mean, if you're on Onondaga looking at what's transpired, it's like, we got to get this right.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, the other part of that, what I was just saying. I mean, in that stark contrast between the unity that had built up and its disruption brought upon by Lucifer, that penetrated most fog in people's minds, you know, in most celestials' minds, you know. So just that in itself probably, you know, makes it highly unlikely that there wouldn't be a rebellion, just the clarity of that contrast. I mean, everyone in the super universe even noticed that lowly, you know, Amadon showed a lot of high celestial beings up.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like okay. I think we need to take it up a notch here. yeah. Maybe we shouldn't take this quite so much for granted. Homo erectus on that dirt ball over there just showed us up. Maybe. Yeah. So. All right. So let's see. Yeah, we did. Okay. So now we've got the purposes.
14 purposes of the 7 super universes. There are 7 major purposes which are being unfolded in the evolution of the 7 super universes. Each major purpose in super universe evolution will find fullest expression in only one of the 7 super universes. And therefore, does each super universe have a special function and a unique nature?
Just remember, okay, so, we're talking about this 7 master spirit differential. Just like the 7 worlds in each of the paradise circuits. For instance, in detail, we went through the Father's 7 worlds. And remember how that went. They basically couldn't tell us anything about the first 6 worlds. And they said, even naming them, they had to try to dream up something that kind of had some relationship to the ascension scheme to call those other 6 worlds. Okay. When you get to the 7th world, what's the name of the 7th world? Ascendington. Okay. The ascension scheme, is the theme of the 7th super universe. It's very direct that they can just state that in the name of the 7th Father's world. That's Ascendington, because the 7th scheme is about the ascension, is about ascension. Okay, the other 6 schemes are shrouded in almost total mystery. I mean, over and over in the other 6 worlds, they said some fuzzy thing that kind of had something to do with something we knew about, but basically they said, by and large, everything that goes in this world is not revealed, because it has to do with the other 6 schemes. It would be a violation of the revelatory mandate to even give a name for that Father's world that suggested that other scheme.
Because we can't find harmony for it in our minds, and it would confuse us.
Apparently, there's all kinds of things. They give you some statements like that, but for whatever reason, whether it's disruption of harmony in our mind or just it's not part of what's going to be revealed yet. It's just the way it is. We just don't really know much. And you can pick, try to parse every word in those about the, it just says we can't really say anything about it.
No purpose to reveal.
Gene just went right where I was going to go next. That's the key. To go back to the title of the section, Purposes of the 7 Super Universe. So when we think about that purposing, we think about our personality purposes, our self. It makes it a purposed self. Okay? And your basic way that you start to understand personality, we have that whole kind of biggest thing to begin to wrap your mind around about the triunity, but that's not where we usually start. We start with, personality is spirit pattern, okay? So we think about it as we have this certain flavor of unity in this super universe and the purposing of that flavor of unity. This sort of sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, we've got one of the facets of that spirit unity, spirit pattern. So the purposing of that particular spirit, that particular flavor of unity. Now, the purposing itself, we probably could begin to have some sense of, because it's not like personalities have 7 different flavors. Personality is way transcendent of the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, okay? The reason that you have these differences of the 7 super universes is the selves of the seven master spirits are fundamentally different flavors. Okay? Not just their personalities. Their selves are different. Okay? So, are distinct. So, there's a different flavor of unity in those other six super universes that gets purposed. That's the deep mystery. It's not really so much a different purposing as it is, you know, fundamentally, as it's a difference of what's being purposed. It's a fundamentally different thing that gets purposed.
Don't we have a clue in you know, the seven different ways that deity can associate with itself and the you know, spirit and sun and...
Right. I mean, this is the only thing that you could perhaps try to somehow work with and deduce something from. The more you could understand what those seven different sub-absolute associations are, I mean, see, you know, like I said, I mean, that's you know why there's seven and why there's seven flavors. If you could just figure out the mathematics to derive what those seven flavors taste like, see, from first principles, maybe you could get at this. I don't know if that's something we could do. I certainly haven't figured it out yet, but that's the only thing that we have that you could start with is, you know, it's Father, Son, Spirit, Father, Son, Father, Spirit, Son, Spirit, Father, Son, Spirit. Yeah, you know that, but what exactly does that mean? See?
can't even get a handle on each one, let alone the combinations.
Right, yeah. So it's pretty mysterious.
Maybe if we pursue supremacy through our Ascendington plan, you know, we'll start to get a feel for this other stuff.
Well, I mean, the moment we leave this planet, we're going to start to come into contact with the other six schemes. You know, they're not revealed in here, but it's not like they're not manifest all over the place. You know, the more you start going up your ascension, the more you'll be interacting with all these other six things that are going on in the super universe. So, you know,
all of them have components of each.
Yeah. So, you know, there's countless beings, they tell us, that, you know, they're not even suggested, you know, in here. So the moment that you get, you know, to the next life, you can go, well, where are all these beings? They aren't in the Urantia book. Yeah, that's all the beings that have nothing to do with the ascension scheme. They're not revealed in here. You're going to immediately come in contact. There's all these sons of God that aren't revealed and all kinds of stuff, they tell you, you know, that, you know, they're not at all in here. So
it's going to be like a Star Wars canteen.
Yeah. I hope not. Maybe on the first Mansion World, but... All right.
Orvantan, the seventh super universe, the one to which your local universe belongs, is known chiefly because of its tremendous and lavish bestowal of merciful ministry to the mortals of the realms. It is renowned for the manner in which justice prevails, as tempered by mercy, and power rules as conditioned by patience. While the sacrifices of time are freely made to secure the stabilization of eternity, Orvantan is a universe demonstration of love and mercy.
See, okay, yeah, just think about it. So it's, you know, the ascension scheme is a primary scheme. So the things that the ascension scheme needs, lots of patient love, you know, are going to be in a, yeah, are going to be a big feature of the super universe. Okay, but it's not like there isn't love and mercy in all seven super universes. You know, it's just, it's going to be very obvious, you know, on display here, because you have so much of an emphasis on trying to bring, you know, animal origin creatures up to paradise.
Except if your planet happens to be quarantined.
Yeah. Well, but even then, the last paragraph of this section. Yes. Okay.
It is, however, very difficult to describe our conception of the true nature of the evolutionary purpose which is unfolding in Orvantan. But it may be suggested by saying that in this super creation, we feel that the six unique purposes of cosmic evolution as manifested in the six associated supercreations, are here being interassociated into a meaning of the whole. And it is for this reason that we have sometimes conjectured that the evolved and finished personalization of God the Supreme will in the remote future and from Uversa rule the perfected seven superuniverses in all the experiential majesty of his then attained almighty sovereign power.
Okay, so now bring in, your understanding of God the Mother. God the Supreme is God the Mother into this picture, the universal mother. You see that meaning of the whole, the individuality of the whole, the personal purposive footprint of God the Supreme in the finite, the universal mother. When you have all three, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit together in the seventh super universe, you have something that has obviously quite a bit of similarity to the Paradise Trinity, the source of the mother. See, and that's basically what they're saying. They recognize that personal purposive expression is thickest here in the seventh super universe. She is more present here. Okay? And God the Supreme is God the Mother. And so they see this as the beginning of that eventual full condensation of that personal purposive nature as a He, as the Supreme Being. It's beginning to get thickest here, first. And so that's why they say, well, that makes us think that, if it's thick, the personal purposive is thickest here now, maybe that's where He will be, is here. That the headquarters for the Supreme Being will be in the seventh super universe. That's the basic. They're just associating where would be the personal headquarters for the Supreme Being. Maybe it's going to be where the personal purposive part is the most present right now. Okay, so, and it also, when you see how much this super universe has to do with the evolution of God the Mother, God the Supreme is God the Mother, it adds even more power to that statement that, the mother influence dominates your growth all the way up through the local universe. Well, it's obviously going to be a big factor all the time in this super universe. So again, just that recognition that more and more you're going to become aware of a personal communion besides your personal communion with God the Father. And it's basically what they're saying is it's the easiest here to begin to have that other recognition of a personal communion. A personal communion with God the Mother. And she'll be very definitively adding. And again, see the personalization of God the Supreme. In this early part of the book, every time that they're wanting you to think top down and really think about God the Mother, not so much God the Almighty, they use the expression God the Supreme to get you in that top down mode.
Right. As Orvantan is unique in nature and individual in destiny, so also is each of its six associated super universes. A great deal that is going on in Orvantan is not, however, revealed to you. And of these unrevealed features of Orvantan life, many are to find most complete expression in some other super universe. The seven purpose of superuniverse evolution, purposes of superuniverse evolution are operative throughout all seven superuniverses, but each supercreation will give fullest expression to only one of these purposes. To understand more about these superuniverse purposes, much that you do not understand would have to be revealed, and even then you would comprehend but little. This entire narrative presents only a fleeting glimpse of the immense creation of which your world and local system are a part.
Okay, see, so kind of the spirit of that paragraph, combined with what they said up at the beginning of the previous paragraph about it is, however, very difficult to describe our conception of the true nature of the evolutionary purpose which is unfolding in Orvinton. That's meant to contrast with, you know, saying, oh, it's about love and mercy. No, it's not that simple. I'm trying to remind you, I mean, technically, what it means to have the flavor of the seventh master spirit is really beyond our comprehension right now. They can kind of just give us little fuzzy thoughts to play with. But, you know, they're saying, yeah, we can't even think about any way to really describe it directly to you. You just don't have anything even remotely similar to play off of for an analogy or anything. And in that mode, see, so then they just strengthen that in this paragraph that she just read. But again, reminding you that the other six are in play here. And fundamentally, how can the other six be in play here if the difference is about the seven different master spirits and this is only the super universe of the seventh master spirit? How could the other six be in play here at all? Someone answer that question? There must be some sort of a crossover. It must
the
be.
Individuality of the whole?
Well, how many reflective mother spirits are there in this super universe?
Seven.
One of each flavor.
Yeah. And they're tied into the supreme.
Yeah. We have a sevenfold mindal womb of the super universe. Because there's this together is one presence of the seven reflective mother spirits, one reflective mother spirit from each of the seven master spirits come together as one. Okay. Yes, there's just one spiritual womb, but there's a sevenfold mindal womb. Okay, so the associativity here is complete.
It's a grand universe level.
Right. But it's just one unity flavor on top of it. Okay, because there's just one master spirit, one spiritual womb here. Okay, but that's, you know, see again, you know, all of this, you want to get to this point where you're thinking technically about this and understanding why there has to be seven reflective mother spirits. If you had just the one, then there couldn't be all seven schemes going on here. There would be no foundation for the other six schemes to stand on. They need to stand on, you know, the upholder of those other six schemes. The other six reflective mother spirits in our super universe. And then, of course, again, they're not, it's not like they're, I keep stressing, you want to think of those seven together as one. It's a conjoint presence. So, again, this thinking about, what happens when you leave this world, you immediately come into relationship with those other six schemes. Because it really, they're never totally disjoint from, they're always all together as one. You have the seven all together as one in all seven super universes. The difference is the unity flavor that's on top of it. Not the associativity, not the mindal. Yeah. There's a commonality of mind, and there's even a commonality with the Ancients of Days, like I was talking about. There's a lot of commonalities all the way around. Okay, it's that spiritual womb has walls and is very distinct, and there's no crosstalk. Okay, mindily, there's a lot of crosstalk. Okay, and now everyone knows. We have this fun little giving of our address in the universe. Just read that first little paragraph there.
Your world is called Urantia, and it is number 606 in the planetary group or system of Satania. This system has at present 619 inhabited worlds and more than 200 additional planets are evolving favorably toward becoming inhabited worlds at some future time.
Why don't you just read that first one before we read the rest of the address, because I wanted to remind you of in the third paragraph of the preface of paper 49 about the inhabited worlds. You don't have to go there. They give you a little more detail on that reference to more than 200 additional planets are evolving favorably, okay, toward becoming inhabited worlds. So up there in the preface of paper 49, they say, there are 36 uninhabited planets in Satania, in our local system. There are 36 uninhabited planets nearing the life endowment stage. So, where we were 550 million years ago. And several are now being made ready for the life carrier. So, very, very soon, that life implantation is going to happen there. So 36 are really close, in geologic time terms. And there are nearly 200 spheres which are evolving so as to be ready for life implantation within the next few million years. Again, just a few million years, relative to 550 million. Okay, so in other words, like they're saying, so you put those two together, a little, nearly 200 plus the 36 gets you the more than 200 that they mention here. Okay. And the thing that I wanted to stress that, because, get this really, sunk in, that the implication of that is that when we're trying to get to roughly 1,000 inhabited planets, and they're not just sort of done in some sort of continuous stream, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They're done in waves and groups. Apparently, about 200 a block, separated by a big gap of time. Okay, so you have just a fraction of 1,000 that's ever feeding into one system headquarters. Okay, so we were part of the last block, and it's been hundreds of millions of years since there's been a new inhabited world. Basically, remember there was a couple stragglers. There was the 12 since the rebellion. Okay, but you basically have these very separate blocks of apparently about 200. So you've got two more waves, and the next wave is, coming up very soon, and then there'll be the rest, sometime hundreds of millions of years down the road, apparently, after that. About 800, and then take about 1,000, see.
Yeah. This lend credence to the fact that the Father, the I Am, is not really a machine. He is a person. That he's just not, or at least not an entity that we can.
The universe is mind made and personality managed.
Right.
See?
Right.
Yeah, it has.
So when the Father really, it's the conjoint actor that sets things in motion from what they can gather, and it's just there's a rhythm that we can't detect.
Right, and there has to be. It's just
that's personality.
Right. See, there it has to be personality managed. That's what I was just trying to point that out. You can't just wind it up and let it go, or you won't have enough room and enough people to handle all of the ascenders on Gerasim, in the mansion worlds. It has to be managed. This is all very carefully managed, so that you only have as many people as you can handle, feeding through that little capillary tube there, Right. It's all very carefully managed, and it all goes all the way back to, how many worlds you implant life on. And, obviously, you don't, all 200 are not done all at the same moment. Even the 200 are spread out over a spectrum. And so it's all very carefully managed. Yeah, you wouldn't want to have a housing shortage on the mansion worlds. Because there's height limits, and
Somebody did all 1,000 worlds all at once.
you'd have to just, you know, stay in cryo storage for a long time. Okay, so that's I just wanted to break it for that, and now go ahead and read the whole address here.
Satania has a headquarters world called Gerasim, and it is system number 24 in the constellation of Nurlachadek. Your constellation, Nurlachadek, consists of 100 local systems and has a headquarters world called Edentia. Nurlachadek is number 70 in the universe of Nebadon. The local universe of Nebadon consists of 100 constellations and has a capital known as Salvington. The universe of Nebadon is number 84 in the minor sector of Ensa. The minor sector of Ensa consists of 100 local universes and has a capital called U Minor the Third. This minor sector is number 3 in the major sector of Splandon. Splandon consists of 100 minor sectors and has a headquarters world called U Major the Fifth. It is the fifth major sector of the superuniverse of Orvantum, the seventh segment of the Grand Universe. Thus, you can locate your planet in the scheme of the organization and administration of the universe of universes.
Okay. You know, there's some things you can notice in there. The minor sector of ENSA consists of 100 local universes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, see? All right. You know.
It was completed.
Yeah. Right. So we've got all 100 in ENSA.
It's going to have a more symmetry to it than something that is.
And, you know, think about how there's something that sort of correlates with that. It's the minor sector is number 3. Number 3. Okay, in the major sector is Splandon. You know, we have U minor the third, you know. We don't have U minor than 98th. You know, we're the third minor sector. So,
Starting from where?
Well, but it's not surprising, that we might have 100.
Yeah,
it seems to make sense that we would have 100. It's one thing for, to be U major the fifth and for 5 to be a small number. It only goes to 10. Okay, right. But there's 100 minor sectors in a major sector, so, it could be U minor the big number, instead of U minor the third. Yeah, so that's kind of a, just notice some of the little things. There's all those details about, you're the our constellation is number 70, and there's all kinds of information there about where we fit into the sequence of things. All right.
The grand universe number of your world, Urantia, is 5,342,482,000,000. 330.
I think you have to start out with billion.
No, you got it right.
337,666.
Yep.
That is the registry number on Uversa and on Paradise. Your number in the catalog of the inhabited worlds. I know the physical sphere registry number, but it is of such an extraordinary size that it is of little practical significance to the mortal mind.
Okay, now that last one, okay, now notice they didn't say it's beyond your numerical concept, but that whole bit where we're talking about Jupiter and Mars and, and how they obviously are not destined for eternity, but it's not like they're not counted. Every collection of matter that's big enough to form itself into a sphere, apparently, has a number. Yeah, in a catalog somewhere. It would be a very big number.
Physical sphere registry
number, right? And then I could hear John mumbling about the 666 there. Okay. Now this is one of those fascinating little
a lot about that in the next decade.
Little numerical thing here. You know, we all know that we have this mark of the beast notion, you know, from Revelation of 666. So you're left with a mystery that you can't solve. Okay, so now, I mean, it appears from history that the reason that you have that 666 in Revelation is, you know, there's this recognition through Revelation of the number 7, as we've been talking about. 7 is a number of completeness, okay? And so you have in this, in human, sort of the human history of numerology, as it were, and it's like, okay, so 7 is complete. And so if I want to express the fact of the contrast between heaven and earth, okay, heaven is going to be complete, threefoldly complete, triune completeness. It's going to be 777. Okay, and earth is going to be triune incompleteness, 666. We fall short in a triune way, okay, of being heaven. I mean, so you know, there's definitely, you know, lots of evidence that that's one of the basic notions in play with that numerology of 666. It's to indicate, you know, this replete incompleteness.
Almost like the perfection of humanism.
Yeah, whatever.
Just a hell of a place to live on.
Right. You know, it's not hell. You know, it has nothing to do, remember, you know, hell is a very recent fabrication. Right. You know, it isn't about hell. It's about incompleteness. Okay, but you're reading along in the Urantia book, and there it is, and you're going, "What the heck?" I mean, so and I don't know what you don't know what to make of it.
What I made of it was that, you know, you hear all the time, like I've heard a lot of the Christians and stuff saying that this book, because it has Satania and then it has 666 and all that stuff, that it's not the best book to read, you know, so that part kind of bothers me. I mean, there's two things that bother me about this book. Number one, they choose to name the world Satania, okay, and that in the Bible.
In the local system.
Yeah, and then they bring this, first in the one part they talk about the number of the beast, you know, and that long, I don't know where it's at, but remember, they talk about that with the John and the
Revelation,
four corners and all that. But then they put this in there blatantly. Mm-hmm. And so then we're just supposed to kind of...
Well, see now... Now, okay, my response to that is, if there's only two things that bother you in the Revelation, you need to read it some more. There should be millions of things that bother you.
No,
or it's not Revelation.
Okay, well, there's maybe...
Remember, that's the point I've been trying to make. You know, until you experience this book... creating a holistic psychic turmoil, you haven't found the revelation. It's an epical revelation. In its fullest truth engagement, it will upset every apple cart in your mind. That's what the revelation is supposed to do. It should be nothing but a challenge. It should be, the less it's a challenge, is the less you're experiencing it. Dig deeper, build up more, even more tension. In order to make progress, you got to go effort, struggle, conflict. You need to come into holistic conflict, wholehearted conflict. Then you've found the revelation. And now you can actually exercise faith in the face of that conflict, that wholehearted conflict. Remember how personality needs a wholehearted state to really engage? You need wholehearted conflict in order to genuinely exercise faith, determination, love, loyalty, and then and only then will you make progress in striking step with the truth of the revelation. That's what you're looking for. You want to find that conflict. That's what you're seeking. Because you know you're the incomplete. You're the 666. Okay? There's nothing 777 about us. And so, yeah, but that aside, I mean, isn't it interesting, you know, that the inhabited sphere registry number ends in 666? Take it for what it is. To contrast that, the registry number might end in 666, but...
Your planet is a member of an enormous cosmos. You belong to a well-nigh infinite family of worlds, but your sphere is just as precisely administered and just as lovingly fostered as if it were the only inhabited world in all existence. Presented by a universal sensor hailing from Uversa.
I mean, that's one of the most important sentences in the whole book. It's such an important sentence that they named the planet after that sentence. The name they chose to coin to call our world. Okay. You know, when we talk about Urantia, okay, etymologically you have heavenly place there, Uran and TIA. Okay. And see, normally when you take a word and you capitalize it, you put a capital U on it in this case, okay, that puts a definite article in front of it. You know, be the heavenly place. Well, you go, well, okay, not literally. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's lots of inhabited worlds. There's 5 trillion, you know, okay. Yeah, there's a lot of inhabited worlds. You know, and so, you know, like when you see me give the etymology of that, instead of putting the, I'll say, you know, it's your or our, depending on if it's them talking to us and saying it's your heavenly place or us talking about ourselves, it's our heavenly place. But that's factually you need that there. But in truth, what did they just tell you? In truth, it is the heavenly place. Yeah. Our world is just as precisely administered and just as lovingly fostered as if it were the heavenly place. The one and only place in the heavens. Yeah. So, you know, it's the literalness of the etymology is there, even if you once you recognize the full truth, you know. And what's the personal analog or personal parallel of this? Joan is loved as if she's the only person in the entire universe, because who loves her? An absolute father. Okay, the father loves her absolutely, as if she's the only person. Okay? And what did we say earlier tonight? Is there no relationship between the beings and the things in the universe? No, there's nothing but relationship. And you will experience that more and more as we see the power personality synthesis manifest before our eyes. Okay? If it's true of Joan, it must be true of the things as well, okay? To see the universe as a cosmos. It's not just a universe in the current sense of the word universe, okay? It's a cosmos. It's a universal harmony. It's a harmonizing universe. It's a system of things and beings with one absolute first source and center of all those things and beings. That's where you live. You have a place in the cosmos, a heavenly place. That's the truth of where you live. Yeah. And in terms of the way it's administered by this whole vast hierarchy of administration, executive, legislative, judicial, and all that, it's as if it's the one and only heavenly place. All right, let's take a moment here.